The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Oh, good morning. This is Lunette in Talent.
Hello, Lunette. How are you doing this morning behind enemy lines?
I'm okay. I'm not too concerned about the national election, but I am concerned about the Jackson County election, and specifically the Denise Krause candidate for commissioner. She was behind this, changed the commissioners from 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just concerned that she just throws out these out-and-out lies or misrepresentations, and nobody's checking her on it or calling her on it. For the changing the commissioners from 3 to 5, they were telling their...
Well, we ended up beating her on that. You know that, of course.
Yeah, I know. I'm so glad. but I would talk to supporters of her, and they were... The information they would give out was false. And the same thing with her running for commissioner. So maybe I shouldn't be concerned, but when I get an ad on my phone that's saying Medford is the fifth highest crime rate in Oregon, enough is enough, say no to Sparacino, you go on the internet and you try to find support for that statement, and there is none. In fact, the Ashland,
Ashland.news?
No. Oh, it's another one. And they came out with an article today, the 10 most dangerous cities in Oregon, and Medford's not on there. Out of 10 cities with the highest crime, Medford's not on there. So it's,
Well, you have to understand, Lynette, that it is legal to lie in political advertising. It just is.
Yeah,
it's First Amendment. First Amendments are, you know, lies are protected by the First Amendment. And it would appear that the people behind the Krause campaign are involved in what would sound to me like a lie or a distortion of that thing. Now, I remember that article, which was referencing the Medford, the fifth most dangerous city in the world, right? Or in the state of Oregon.
Oregon.
Yeah, and where that came down to is they didn't put the rest of the story in there when they found out, is that Medford is very, very good, unlike many cities in the liberal hive minds, of reporting actual crime that goes on. They were quite dutiful about reporting accurate statistics about all crime. And if I recall correctly, I'm just doing this and spitballing from memory, all right, because I talked to someone from Medford Police about it at that time, that it had to do with Medford was much better at dutifully keeping track of statistics and reporting them honestly. And while you would have the liberal hive minds that were defund the police and they let's not send anybody out, let's not take the call, et cetera, and then they would look better by comparison.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on there. Okay, but remember, lies and distortions are perfectly legal in political campaigns. There we go. Okay?
But I would think that those not in favor of Krause would be making it known of the misrepresentation that she is
putting
out to the public.
In my opinion, and this is just my opinion, it may work out fine for Randy. I hope Randy gets in there. But Randy's campaign has been very quiet, has been very, he hasn't been as active, in my opinion, that I'm aware of, as she has. And the one thing I'll give her credit for is that she has been everywhere. She is hungry because the Democrats are hungry for a county commission seat. And that's, of course, why they were pushing the 5 seats, too, because they figured that they'll always get a communist from the South County. Talent and Allen and Ashland, rather, to be in there. So that's what's going on. So just remember, political ads, you can lie in that. It's perfectly legal. All right? 8:10, this is the Bill Meyer Show. Happy to take your call, 770-5633. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now. 13 minutes after 8, Captain Bill Simpson standing by. We're going to be talking about how taxpayers are on the hook for ceremonial burns. I can't wait to get that story from Northern Cal. Election calls. Let's go to Rogue Walker. Hello, Rogue Walker. Give me a quick one. What you got on your mind?
Bill.
Good morning.
Just got back from a 20-something state cruise across America the last 2 months.
What did you find out?
We found out, you know, one of the saddest things, people in Oregon, in Medford, don't understand. There ain't no talk radio out there no more. The AMs are gone, and all we listen to, like the best FM channel, the country, they played the old country, was in Arkansas, but I found no talk radio anywhere.
Really?
So you got to have Sirius radio, or you got to have something like that, because you can't, there's no talk radio, Bill. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, AM, of course, we let go of our AM stick. For the, for reasons because we lost the lease back in the day and it made more sense, but we're still on, you know, just fine.
Well, I know, but the government supposedly is selling off all the AMs those frequencies are going to the military or somebody. But I'm telling you, Bill, people here are very fortunate to have you because it ain't out there.
I was not aware of that. I'm not aware of them selling it off to the military or anything like that, but now you're going to make me want to look that up. I haven't seen that story, but. The main issue, though, is that we had George Soros ended up purchasing up a couple hundred major market and mid-market stations here recently. So he's looking to get some control in there, too. Let me go to we got Lucretia. Lucretia, we need your theme, of course. You want to weigh in on that chicken, the bird flu here in Southern Oregon, that story. Go ahead and give me your take.
Yeah, Bill, I'm just tired of bullshine. This is ridiculous.
What's
you know,
that?
It's like all the people that believe in the scientism, the carbon that this, you know, humans only put out with all industry and their cars and use of energy, 3% of the 0.4%, and they believe that crap, and they're obviously not even consistent.
So connect this then with our killed chickens here in Southern Oregon, huh?
Well, some fish that are sick in your fish bowl, whatever, you know, tank. Do you change the water? Do you think they really got a virus?
Oh, so you're going down there, the no virus. There's no such thing as a virus then.
Well, let's put Mike Yeadon, vice president of Pfizer, that killing organization that's killed millions, you know, with their Vioxx and their Gardasil and this crap that they just promoted through fear.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't even work against cancer, you know, that type of crap. You know, this guy's come out. He's done the research, the 100 years. He's looked at the 40 studies. You can put people in a room with people with colds and flus, and they don't get sick.
Well, yeah, because some people have better immune systems, Lucretia.
But wait a minute. You can't have a change of temperature that can cause it. You can have stress. You can have fear. You can be eating a lot of sugar and alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things, though, that would affect someone's immune system. You've always been able to put some sick people into a room with other healthy people and not everybody gets sick. That's true. You know, you're right about that. But I wouldn't say that means that there's no such thing as a virus.
Well, wait a minute. He's looked there. Why don't people that go hang out with people that are really sick get colds or flu? Why don't they get them either?
Sometimes they do.
No, because you can't scrape. And Dr. Kaufman and Dr. Cowan talked to the virologists that have not once identified, even if you scraped 100,000 people's lungs, could you get enough virus to even identify it?
Okay, well... I guess there's just a huge, huge delusion in the scientific community that there's such things as a virus affecting people. Although I didn't have any problem with COVID because I was on ivermectin all the time. And ivermectin supposedly is helpful because it is a protease inhibitor, which stops viruses. So it stopped a non-existent virus from multiplying in me, apparently. All right. I don't know where you go on this one. I don't want to go into the there is no such thing as a virus theory at this point. I'm not quite ready there, Lucretia. Let me go to Dave. Hello, Dave. Fire away. Let's hear it.
Yeah, Bill. So my first question to you is this, you know, is the baby seal thing, is that more an Oregon thing or is that like a nationwide? I'm just curious.
What? No, my feeling, though, is just that. You know, I was just wondering, though, if my calmness before the election is just me being a baby harp seal ready to be clubbed later on. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Look, I wanted to comment on a couple things Bert Shager said. By the way, I still have a big problem with him, you know, and people like Alan DeBoer, who bought the Betsy Jones snake oil, you know, back then, and now they're just like, oh, it didn't work. Yeah, I think that's a bit disingenuous. But anyway, what Bert Shager said about during your time with him, he mentioned the Democratic machine.
Right.
And what he thinks there, and I think that's incredibly insightful, and I think it's accurate, mainly because there's no Republican machine in Oregon.
Agreed.
Okay? The party here is weak, and for me, look, I'll go out, I'll support, I'll do whatever I can, but the party here is weak, okay? And when we, I don't care what candidates you put up, okay, we don't have the organization, we don't have the money, you know, to compete at the state level. I don't know what's going to change that, but I have very little confidence.
You know, it would be really nice if we had Dave. What we need is a shadowy figure like George Soros from the right. But right now, most of those shadowy figures are from the left.
No, we need money, Bill.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, you get what is needed is an Arabella for the right wing. And the right wing needs to get to the point where they understand that, yep, they've got to be funding the NGOs and do all the rest of it, just like the left has, because that's the corrupt game the way it's played right now. Point well taken, Dave. I appreciate it. Captain Bill Simpson is standing by. We'll talk with him here in just a bit about the latest racket, this time involving ceremonial burning. Great stuff here.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing.
Captain William E. Simpson, ethologist, Wild Horse Fire Brigade. He's back on the case this morning. Captain, you've been working on this story about, I guess, taxpayers in Oregon are now going to be on the hook for doing some tribal burns here. That's just the latest one. It's on Siskiyou.news, by the way. What do you say?
Yeah, good morning, Bill. Yeah. Well, you know, Pam Marsh has got this new bill that she's floated out there that's passed. They're going to now provide some sort of liability insurance for people that want to dabble in prescribed burning. It seems like they're trying to do anything they can anyway to have more fire. I mean, what any way they can do it, they're going to try to do it. And, you know, you look at the past results with prescribed fire. It's one of those things that listens really good. We're going to get rid of this fuel. We're going to burn it. And, oh, by the way, they usually don't go out of control. But the problem is when you sit down and you do the analysis, if you look at the prescribed fires that have gone out of control and what that cost, it totally dwarfs the theoretical benefits of prescribed fire. So, you know, when you look at, for instance, the Bootleg fire, you know, that was an area that was highly managed. I'm reading right from Forest Watch. They say that it grew rapidly in areas that were subject to all kinds of forest management activities. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. It burned like crazy. You know, 25,000, it just ripped in the first 6 days, ripped through 25,000 acres. You look at some of these other big fires that we've had, you know, they talk about indigenous burning, right? Cultural fire and so forth.
Yeah.
So.
Now, I wanted to ask you first off, and this is what the title of your article is. It's an unholy smoke prescribed in cultural burning, now insured by Oregon taxpayers. This is a question that you're raising at this point. And what is cultural burning, though? Could you define the terms for cultural burning? I've never heard the term cultural burning until this story.
Right. Well, it's been floated out there quite a bit. Gavin Newsom likes that terminology. It's a new spin on the same old thing. It's prescribed fire. Only if you're indigenous and you burn, supposedly the fire and the smoke is not as dangerous. And which, you know.
Okay. All right. So if the tribes want to burn on their tribal lands, it doesn't smoke us out. So white guys set a fire, it's bad. Natives set a fire and the smoke's good. Is that what you're telling me? Is that what they're trying to let us understand with cultural burning? Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think science has gone off the window. I mean, it's just now it's all about marketing and slogans and and trying to get things done under the color of you know, culture. And, you know, of course, white people have culture, too. You know, we all have culture. Not, you know, like Joseph Campbell said, no, there is no noble culture anywhere on the planet. There's noble individuals. And so I had the honor of meeting Joe Campbell over in Hawaii when I lived there before he passed away. But I'm reading right here about the Slater fire. Okay, so, you know, let's just assume, let's take a look at that claim that somehow smoke from cultural fire isn't as dangerous. We're going to have to call UCLA, who just put out that brand new study over the 10-year period that said that, you know, wildfire smoke kills 5,000 Californians every year prematurely. 5,000 Californians die premature deaths every year because of wildfire smoke.
Well, your wife died. Okay. Your late wife died from wildfire smoke, too. You've talked about this on my show.
Yeah, that's correct. And so looking at, now this is from The Guardian. I'm reading from The Guardian. And we're talking about the Slater fire. And, okay, they say that, okay, the indigenous people know how to make this not happen. And when they burn, it's not as dangerous. The smoke doesn't kill you, whatever.
Uh-huh.
So I'm reading right from The Guardian. It says, the Slater fire raged through the ancestral heart of the Karuk tribe in the Klamath Mountains near the Oregon border on September 8th. The tribe, known for its deep knowledge of cultural burning and forest management, saw almost 200 homes in the community of 1,000 go up in flames. So right in the heart of where they supposedly know how to make this not happen, it happened.
It happened, yeah.
And it happens in a very big way. So, you know, I think these myths, people are so desperate to try to burn our forests down instead of have sustainable forest management and logging. I mean, we need to start getting all these people that have these illusions. I don't know what they're taking these days, and they're overly medicated or something, because these people that come up with these insane ideas, you know, I mean, you look at the prescribed fires that have gone out of control. You look at the Sierra Grande fire. You look at the big fire they had over there in New Mexico a couple years ago. You know, 200 homes, the Sierra Grande fire, 280 homes burned. When you look at the cost, you know, there's over $1 billion in these two combined fires and losses. And then you look at what Oregon's Pam Marsh's bill wants to try to do. Oh, well, we have a $1 million liability cap.
Yeah, that's what and that's what you mentioned here, because Governor Kotek ended up signing. I'm taking this from your article, by the way. Speaking with Captain William E. Simpson this morning. Governor Kotek signed House Bill 4016 this year, establishing the pilot prescribed fire liability program. It authorizes claims covering certain losses arising from escape prescribed fires and cultural burns. So this would be, as an example, when the Lomakotze gang ended up trying to burn or prescribe fire the Ashland watershed, and they ended up burning the old growth. Remember that story a number of years ago?
Yep.
So this essentially is state insurance against the damage caused by these kind of actions, prescribed fire and or cultural burns, which means, I guess, a tribal burn that is much healthier than a non-tribal burn. I guess that's how they're trying to define it here.
Well, we know darn well that's just a lot of baloney. I mean, that's just pure baloney. You know, in fact, quite frankly, I don't think prescribed burn or they call it RX fire. They have all kinds of marketing ploys. Is really something that we can talk about at scale. Okay. There are little areas where it makes sense. You know, when I used to log back in the day in the late '60s, early '70s, we'd burn our slash piles because if you didn't, it'd become bug habitat and the bugs would then go into the trees. You know, there's things you could do. But today, to talk about prescribed fire as some solution for the broad problem we have with wildfire in the West.
In other words, that we're going to solve this problem with prescribed fire on millions upon millions of overgrown forests, millions of acres, right?
It doesn't scale. It's not a scalable solution. It's a myth. And then on top of that, they're putting, and quite frankly, if I was indigenous, And you know, by the way, people try to say, oh, Bill's anti-indigenous. That's not true. you know, my sister was married to a Klamath tribal member. You know, my partner, Michelle, is part Cherokee. You know, I mean, I have no problem with indigenous people whatsoever. But when there's these fake solutions that are created, and then they try to color it with cultural overtones.
And then when they want the state of Oregon's taxpayers then to essentially take tax money and insure their cultural burns, their prescribed fire, that's not right. That doesn't make sense.
No. And then on top of it, when you dig into it, they got $1 million cap, and they say, oh, by the way, when the fund's empty, we're not covering anybody. Mm-hmm. When you read the bill, that's the so-called fine print. It's $1 million cap. Well, you know, how many homes in Ashland are $1 million or more? I mean, hundreds probably.
Yeah, it doesn't take much.
You know, $1 million isn't going to do anything, but they're trying desperately to sell American taxpayers on prescribed burn. That is not the solution. The solution is we've collapsed our herbivory. All the critters, you know, they've got this whole thing upside down on its head. The reason we have these fires is we've collapsed our herbivory. We're down millions and millions of deer on the West Coast. They were gobbling up each little deer you see out there on the lawns in Ashland. When they're up in the mountains, and by the way, they all left the mountains because there's very few left in the depredation. The predators are...
Not much has been done ever since the... there's been a real protection of the predator class up in the forest, right? And that's led to a lot of this. And also hunting. Sure. You have to talk about hunting, too. That's part of it.
Yeah. The other thing that's happening is, see, the predator population is pretty stable. When prey drop, then the predator pressure becomes more pronounced because you have less prey, the same number of predators. But the point I'm making is that they've left the mountains because they know lions and bears and wolves and coyotes don't like people. So they come down to Ashland. But the point is this. Each little deer you see, that little deer is eating a little blacktail. They eat about 1.3 tons of grass and brush a year. So when you're missing on the West Coast here in Oregon, California, we're missing about 2 million deer. You do the math, you know, you're talking in the neighborhood of 3 million tons of annual grass and brush.
Yeah, you've talked about numerous times here the Wild Horse Fire Brigade, how you've always been wanting to get the fire prone areas chewed down by nature's lawnmowers. But you're also talking about the other herbivory, too, including deer and elk, right? Keeping them,
right.
making them healthier.
It's like chess. You got, you know, you move the pawn first. You just don't bring your queen right out. You know, the thing is it's going to take a while to solve the problem with managing our ruminants, the deer and the elk, but the horses here are sitting there in a corral. They're ready to go.
Yeah, I know. It's a small amount, though, overall, though.
But it's a step in the right direction. We can't say, oh, we're not going to do it because we can only reduce, you know, a few hundred tons of grass and brush, but we do it for free, mm-hmm. and we can do it in critical areas. You know, it's strategy. Okay, you look at, what areas do we have rare sequoias? Where do we have these rare champion trees? And they're all surrounded by grass and brush. You know, what are we going to do there? Are we going to light a fire and maybe burn it down? Or can we introduce some of these horses and let them do what they've done for 2 million years in North America, which is each horse eats 5.5 tons a year of grass and brush?
Yep. We need more of nature's lawnmowers, no doubt about that. Would you suggest from your experience, though, that there be a moratorium on hunting for a few years? I know that would get a lot of people really upset, a lot of hunters. I understand. Yeah, I understand.
I think it's first things first, okay? I don't think we want to jump way off onto the edge here first. I think we need to talk about managing the herbivory that's available today, which is, okay, ruminants, goats, sheep, cows are great in the right places, okay? Mm-hmm. But because they digest.
In other words, get rid of the no moo agenda, right?
Yeah. Moo is good in the right place. So the point, and your audience doesn't understand the biology probably very well. I run into a lot of people, they don't understand the biology and digestive process of a ruminant. In fact, they don't understand that horses are not ruminants. Okay, ruminants, because they have multi-chamber stomach, chew a cud, you know, they burp up the cud from the first chamber, they re-chew it, so they masticate what they eat very well. Means they crush all the seeds of the native plants. So when they poop, nothing comes out that grows, really. A horse doesn't do that. A horse has a single stomach, and it passes through quickly. So most of the seeds they eat come out and germinate and grow. So when you use horses in the right locations, you don't want to commingle them in livestock production areas. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense. You put them out into the wilderness where we'd have no other scalable option. Okay, wildfire is a plague that we have to deal with. Prescribed fire is not a scalable solution. Pile burn.
In other words, when you talk about a scalable solution, you can't burn enough to affect the problem.
No, we've got 93 million acres in California alone. 20 million acres has fuel problems, you know, grass and brush problems. Oregon has got about 15 million acres of grass and brush. You know, I mean, and then people want to, Pam Marsh wants to talk about climate change. Okay, lady, look at this, you know, Copernicus Atmospheric Sciences, which is everybody looks to them for what's going on with climate change and atmospheric changes. They said that these fires now are the elephant in the room. The wildfires on the planet now are producing more greenhouse gases than all the fossil fuel being burned in the world for power generation.
That's fascinating when you know how badly those fossil fuels have been demonized, too. Hey, Bill, hang on just a second. People may have a question or two for you, and I'll get them on here in just a moment. We'll be right back with Captain Bill Simpson talking about the insurance program that the state of Oregon is having out here for the fire liability for indigenous prescribed burns and others.
Artisan Bakery Cafe invites you to...
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED. And you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Back with Captain William E. Simpson. We're talking about prescribed fire and herbivory, all the other things, and his latest article up on siskiyou.news. And we will link to that on KMED.com. Captain, you are here, and we got Janie. Hello, Janie. You're with Captain Bill Simpson. What are you thinking about this idea that you know, you can't prescribe fire enough to get tens of millions of acres treated? Go ahead.
Well, I agree. And I agree with him putting the horses in, but I also think that my dad was a rancher, and they always, from May to October, they put cattle in the woods every summer, and they never had any forest fires.
All right.
And in the 1960s, they took the cattle out of the woods, and now we have all kinds of forest fires.
All right. Let me see what he has to say. Let me see what he has to say about that, Janie. Thanks for the call. Bill, your response to Janie?
Well, I was a rancher, too. And in the FFA, raised Bold Herefords and Suffolk sheep. And, yeah, you can use, and again, it's not all or one or the other or none of the above or all of the above. What it is strategic location of various herbivores based upon what they can do. Ruminants, cows, sheep, goats, deer, elk, are all ruminants. And when you put them into areas that have, let's say, wilderness or even critical wilderness, you have to be very careful and cognizant of the native flora, because the native flora or cover crop is critical.
And it will not be replaced because of the way that their multiple stomachs then sterilize the seeds, right? They kill the seeds. Right?
Well, the point I was going to make, Bill, is that cover crops are important for maintaining the hydrology in the forest. In other words, if you don't have good cover crops when it rains, the water runs right off, and you have erosion. It affects the salmon. It hurts your forest. The cover crops are very important, but you have to have them managed so that the fuel loads aren't too high. And the problem, too, is an herbivore that is a ruminant, cow, sheep, goats, elk, etc. If you put them out there too soon in the season, what happens is they'll devour too much of the seeds, and you'll end up with the seed bank becoming depleted. You know, you have to wait.
Yeah, you have to be careful about it. All right.
You have to wait till the seeds drop off the plants, and then you can graze your other animals. Now, with horses, you don't have to worry about that.
Okay, very good. Let me grab Jake. Jake, you're on here. Captain Bill, you used to log. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Yeah, Captain Bill, I've always wondered how come we couldn't just go back to the way that a little group that we're about four guys in, the doubles, the triples, the cripples, the dead, diseased, and dying, and go for spacing, and then you could hit it again, you know, 15 or depending on the spot, and you just we just managed farmer timber, well, that little group never did do any government stuff, but when I did do government stuff or like Medco, they were so careful. I learned a lot about managing. You know, let's not cut. Why can't we do that? Go back to that, and then you wipe the brush out, too.
Any thoughts on that, Bill?
Yeah, so actually I worked with Medco. I know Rex Kelso and the Kelso family, and you know, worked in their mills, worked in the forest before we had our own logging company. And so, yeah, having selective management of the forest, you know, go out there and do selective cutting is really good. I think, though, that if we, the lessons we learned from, for instance, the planting we did after, I think it was after the Silver Fire over in Kalmiopsis, you know, Oregon went in and put $10 million worth of new trees in there, little baby trees. And then, of course, because the herbivores collapsed, the grass grew up around those baby trees, and then when it burned in the next fire, it was so hot it killed the entire reprod. So you've got to look at a balanced approach to managing the forest. It's not one thing or the other. Nobody wants to put it all together into a holistic approach. That's what's needed.
All right, very good. And I'll direct people to siskiyou.news. It's a great story, by the way. It's an unholy smoke prescribed in cultural burning, now insured by Oregon taxpayers. Now, this is coming up on Newsbreak. Do you have to have the Newsbreak app? Or, you know, what is the story? Is this on siskiyou.news, or is this where siskiyou.news is now hosting their news?
Well, I think what happened is, see, Jay Martin, the publisher at Siskiyou News, is having trouble with Facebook and their AI automatically deleting things that AI doesn't like. So, In other words, AI is going to decide what you get to read, Bill. Your audience are all victims of what AI wants to let you read or what it won't let you read. So it will censor things instantly. So when Jay puts something up sometimes at Facebook, if AI reads it in a split second, and then it looks at the political narrative that it's guiding, you know, its algorithm, it goes, oh, this is against the extreme liberal narrative.
Yeah, this is against the agenda of Bernabeu. Okay. All right. So I get it. Well, I'll put that up on KMED.com on my show blog today, and it's a good read. I always appreciate you coming in here, and we'll have you back. All right. And it's good to know, because I wasn't aware that taxpayers are now insuring cultural burns. I feel so inclusive. Okay. Thank you very much, Bill. Take care.
Thank you.
Captain William E. Simpson, all right? Now then, after news, after the news that hopefully is not being censored here, we're going to have the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. Join in at 770-5633, 770-KMED. If you have not won this in the last 60 days, you can win this for Election Day. This is one election you can win. 770-5633, Diner 62, $20 gift certificate next for you.
News is sponsored by Valley View Nursery, your only nursery with online pricing. Visit valleyviewnursery.com. They're closer than you think.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Today is Election Day. And
here's my Zen music. I'm going to pour the water, the soothing water, onto the hot rocks and let the election steam just go all around me. Well, heck with that. Let's do the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. Okay. The Real American Quiz, by the way. All your hearty breakfast favorites. Omelets, skillets, waffles, biscuits, and gravy. Chicken fried steak, cinnamon roll. You're talking real comfort food over at Diner 62. And they have a half ham special for $11.15 Monday through Friday in the mornings during the morning show. Your lunch and breakfast destination. Diner 62, just south of White City. We got Ron Gordon. Ron, welcome back. Good to hear from you. How you doing this morning, buddy? All right?
I'm doing great.
Glad to hear it. Hey, Ron, it was today in history, November 5th of 1862. Lincoln removed General McClellan from the Army of the Potomac. In 1862, McClellan led the army down Chesapeake Bay to the James Peninsula, southeast of the Confederate capital of Richmond. During the campaign, he was kind of timid and sluggish, and it later doomed him. And during the seven-day battles, McClellan was poised near Richmond, but he retreated when faced with a series of attacks by Lee, all right? So anyway, after Lee defeated Pope at the Second Battle of Bull Run, he invaded Maryland, and then with the Confederates crashing into Union territory, Lincoln had no choice but to turn to McClellan to gather the Yankees to stop Lee, and then it just didn't work. They battled to a standstill at Antietam. And so Lee retreats, and gosh, for 6 weeks, Lincoln and McClellan exchanged angry messages. It was the beginning of the end for General McClellan. At one point, McClellan was quoted as, he said something nasty about Abraham Lincoln. So, Ron, for the win, what did General McClellan call President Lincoln? Was it A, a baboon. This is kind of like one of those General Mill type things, right? Was it a baboon, B, a flapdoodle, C, a tenderfoot, D, a yokel, or was it E, a windbag? Of all those insults, what did General McClellan say to Lincoln about Lincoln before he fired him?
You know, I'm going to go with D. I just feel like tenderfoot would be something that was used at that time frame, and I think that that's what it's going to go down at.
Okay, so C, tenderfoot. No,
tenderfoot.
I'm sorry. Oh, sorry, Ron. Let me go. Let me go to Bob. I know. So it wasn't a tenderfoot. Bob, it's either he called Lincoln a baboon, a flapdoodle, a yokel, or a windbag. Which of the four insults, huh?
It was a yokel.
It was a local. No, it wasn't that either. Let me go to Kevin. Hello, Kevin. Wasn't a yokel either, nor a tenderfoot. Baboon, flapdoodle, or a windbag. What did General McClellan call Lincoln back in the day, Kevin? Hello, Kevin?
Hi, this is Calvin. Thanks.
Yeah, Calvin. Baboon, flapdoodle, or a windbag? What was the insult?
The only one I've never heard, and probably because I'm that old, not that old, is flapnoodle.
Flapdoodle? It's a kind of, yeah, no. Sorry.
Okay.
That's right. So we are now between a baboon and a windbag. Hi, KMED. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill, it's Brad.
Hey, Brad. So...
I believe he called him a windbag.
He called him a windbag. No, he did not call him a windbag.
Ah.
I know. No. So whoever wins this now, I mean, you're winning it by default. Hi, who's this? Morning.
This is Dina.
All right, Dina. Did he call him a baboon or a baboon?
Well, I think it has to be a baboon.
Yeah, that's the choice. That's the deal. McClellan did not like President Lincoln. McClellan quoted as saying that Lincoln was nothing more than a well-meaning baboon. He said it publicly. Yeah, so I guess it's nothing new. You know, this kind of story. Sometimes the generals are not real happy with their commander-in-chief. So, Dina, you hang on. You're going to Diner 62. You're the last person standing. We'll have another one of these quizzes a little bit later this week.
Rev up your engines, folks. American
KMED.
856. By the way, wall-to-wall election coverage starts 4 o'clock here. We'll go to the Salem Radio Network, okay, for live stuff, okay? Now then, my favorite election story, honestly, is one came out of Gateway Pundit, and the Reverend David ended up sending this to me. I just thought it was so funny. Kamala Harris supporters around the country have been left rattled because they would get letters and postcards suggesting that they will be volunteering to house illegal alien families. Democrats have championed the open borders, and it seems that when the issue is brought to their own doorstep, the enthusiasm fades. One Harris supporter in Massachusetts shocked after getting what appeared to be a postcard from Harris's campaign. She flipped it over because she had like a sign out front, and the postcard reads, "Thank you for supporting Kamala. We are so appreciative of you putting out a yard sign, but now we need your continued help. We'll be moving a family of two from the country of Nicaragua into your home on October 30th. They'll need food, toiletries, and transportation. Thank you." I love that. Yeah, they're all for open borders until, I wanted somewhere else. I wanted some other neighborhood that also happened in Fresno County and a bunch of other places. Of course, the FBI is looking into it. I guess it's election interference or whatever, but still, I had to laugh. Some emails of the day, and those are sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. While you wait, crowns available, centralpointfamilydentistry.com, on next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant. Lynn writes me this morning, "Hey, Bill, couldn't get through before, but a couple of weeks ago on Friday, drove to Walnut Creek for my dad's 90th birthday, couldn't find hardly any talk radio, either rural or urban. I think I found two stations once I got to civilization and maybe one the whole way down briefly. I thought it was odd. I wondered what is happening. We're so blessed in our area. We have you and KMED and 99.5. There's, Cave Dove does good interviews too. As for the bird flu, I'm not convinced that there's no viruses, but I am convinced the bird flu is a scheme to kill off our food supply. They use PCR tests, I'm pretty sure, and that's a scam right there. And then they kill healthy birds that test positive. It is so maddening. I hope and pray that Trump wins in a landslide and Bobby gets in there and kicks butt. Have you watched the TikTok videos of Trump voters dancing to the YMCA song? They dance like jerks, or dorks, rather, just like Trump dances, and it's hilarious and fun. The latest I saw, people dressed in garbage bags. Yeah. Yeah. I'm still kind of questioning why he does YMCA. I don't know. Maybe it's a reach out to log cabin Republicans. I don't know. But thank you, Lynn. We'll talk again tomorrow, right?
Are you buying or selling a house this year? Here's a tip from Grants Pass Water Lab. If you buy or sell a property with a well,